Chapter 21. Aspen. Aspen was walking down a dark hallway. He wasn't certain how far he'd walked, or how many times he'd turned a corner only to see another identical stretch of hallway in front of him. Far in the distance there was always a faint glimmer of light, just enough to shift utter blackness to merely a very deep darkness. He missed Silas and Rouge. The two young females would have seen this as an adventure, and Silas would be complaining about how hungry she was, even as she happily flew ahead to scout their path. Aspen was just tired. Tired and in his deepest heart frightened. Fear, he knew, would only weaken him, so he shoved it down and focused on the tiredness. One foot in front of the other, step by step, he moved toward the faraway light. There was something else in the darkness with him. He knew it as certainly as he knew the wall beneath his fingers was rough, cold stone. Which meant nothing, because he also knew he wasn't really here. Or at least he prayed that he wasn't. He prayed that whatever had gone wrong when he tried to cast Winnow on Akuji's soulstone was something they could fix. He prayed that he was dreaming. He prayed that his friends would soon find a way to wake him up or bring him home. "Gina, I want to go home." Over and over, as his muffled footfalls echoed through the halls, he prayed. But for the first time since he swore himself to Gina, his goddess didn't answer. "Step. Please. Step. Gina. Step." He tripped over something on the floor in front of him and fell in an awkward sprawl. He landed hard on his left hand and knee, but his right side landed on something soft and cool. Cool but not cold, not stone. The tattoos on his right hand, which he realized for the first time had been dark since his arrival in this place, sprang into life, illuminating his surroundings. And the body beneath him. With a cry, Aspen rolled away, struggling to his feet with his back against the wall. He was disoriented. Which way had he been traveling? He had been keeping his left hand on the wall, turning each time he came to a gap, and now he didn't know which side was left. Not only was he trapped with a corpse, but he had a 50-50 chance of retracing the steps he'd so laboriously taken. The corpse groaned and twitched. Aspen stared, instinctively reaching for his life sense, his mana, a weapon, anything. But there was nothing. Nothing and nothing and nothing. Even stick was gone. The man on the floor groaned again, and his chest rose and fell in a shallow breath. Not dead or undead then, Aspen thought, and the strength of desperation ran out of his limbs like the water he'd been trying not to think about for what seemed like days. Carefully he crawled forward, touching the man's wrist, where he felt the faintest flutter of a pulse. He shifted to touch the man's throat, and the flutter was repeated there, but the skin was cool, almost cold. The man's head rolled, bringing his face into the light cast by Aspen's tattoos, and Aspen froze. "Chester," he whispered. He grimaced at the hoarse croak of his voice. It felt like a confirmation that the time he thought had passed really had. If he was only dreaming, surely his voice would sound normal? Unless, of course, his subconscious mind was convinced his voice should sound dry and cracked, and then it probably would. He shook away those useless thoughts and used his left thumb to raise the eyelid of the man who looked like Chester, but couldn't possibly be. Only white showed beneath, and Aspen released the lid, leaning back and staring at the fallen figure that was apparently his king, his former king. Chester's lean, serious face was thin now, his muscles atrophied and wasted. His light brown hair was faded and wispy, little more than a fringe of almost blonde fuzz. Aspen patted gently at the man's face, then increased the force until he was slapping the unconscious man over and over. He was vaguely aware that he was striking a clearly ill man, but an anger he hadn't even been aware he still harbored took over, until Chester's head was flopping limply from side to side under the ringing blows. Chester groaned once more, and there was a sudden resistance in the scrawny neck. Chester's eyes twitched, and Aspen barely kept back the blow he had been about to deal. "What?" "Where?" Chester's voice, like Aspen's, was a rough croak. His pale blue eyes opened, and his arm jerked twice before he managed to raise a trembling hand to touch his cheek. The skin there was still only faintly red, even after all the times Aspen had hit him, but he grimaced anyway. Aspen rocked back on his heels, felt his back touch the wall, and used the support to climb to his feet. He towered over the fallen man, unable to speak without yelling. Fury boiled in his chest, and he choked on the words that begged to escape. "How could you betray your people? How could you betray me? I thought we were friends." Indeed, Chester had been one of the few people who hadn't been afraid of Aspen when he was a necromancer. The king had raised Yorga's Penbrook from anathema to hero, called him to the palace to chat and drink tea while a war raged around them, and then kicked him to the side as soon as that war was over. IOR gas? Chester's eyes were focused on Aspen's face, where the blue and silver blaze of light from his hand lit his profile. Aspen closed his eyes, looking up at the solid black ceiling, and cursed under his breath. Then he leaned down and clasped his hand around Chester's shriveled forearm, grimacing as the flesh squished unhealthily beneath his fingers. Can you get up, Chester? Chester blinked, perhaps surprised at Aspen's sudden, to him, informality. I don't know. His lips twitched in a ghost of the slightly awkward smile which was his most common expression when among friends. I can try. Aspen sighed and pulled. After several seconds of clumsily adjusting his grip as Chester attempted to get his feet beneath him, Aspen simply gave up and picked up the shorter man. The king felt lighter than Rouge as he settled against Aspen's chest, all bones and skin and nothing more. Looking down at the pitiful wreck of a man, Aspen turned and began walking. What happened to you? He asked when he felt he had his emotions under control. Chester's head lolled as he tried to shake it. I don't know. The last I remember, I was working on a diorama of the gardens. I had just managed to make a topiary. Aspen clenched his jaw, and his fingers tightened on his feeble burden. I don't care about your damn diorama, he managed to force through gritted teeth. How did you end up here? Where is here? Where is that bastard Akuji? As if the name of the Lich Lord was a magic word, the hall shifted around them. The light toward which Aspen had been walking for so long rushed at him as if summoned, and Aspen stumbled as each of his steps seemed to take an hour and cross 1,000 miles. On the third step, everything stopped. Aspen looked around. The hallway was gone, and he and Chester now stood in a vaulted room with columns lining the sides. In front of each column stood the statue of a man. Some of the men were handsome, some were plain, short and heavy, tall and slim, young and old, some wearing clothes that Aspen vaguely recognized from history books, while others looked as if they could have stepped from the streets of modern Bright. The last one, or perhaps the first, was Chester. He wore his favorite red velvet robe with white fur trim, and the heavy golden crown of Cordernel rested on his brow. His hair was full and wavy, and his face bore the aloof mask that he wore on those occasions when he had to face the public. Chester stared up at his own frozen visage, and then lifted a bony hand to stare at the knobby knuckles and distended tendons. What happened? He whispered. The voice that answered came from far down the row of columns, where a tall throne sat atop a high dais. You are a fool, Akuji said. The bare teeth of his skull clacked as he spoke, and the hollow sound of his voice defied his lack of lungs or vocal cords. Chester stared. You're. Akuji lifted his arms from the broad armrests of the throne. The heavy velvet robe fell back, revealing the yellowed metacarpals and ulna. Lich Lord Akuji, master of all you see. Flat, echoing laughter was punctuated by the clicking of his teeth. Aspen looked around. I only see a mausoleum, and a corpse who refuses to stay dead. Akuji's skull tilted, and he tapped fingerbone to jawbone. Yes. The white flames in his eyes somehow looked at Chester where he lay like a bundle of twigs in Aspen's arms. I see a corpse that refuses to die as well. This time when Aspen's grip tightened, it was a protective gesture, pulling the fallen king into his embrace. What is this place, Akuji? Again the chattering laugh, and Aspen felt a shudder of instinctive horror crawl down his back, even though, in his time as a necromancer, he had summoned 1,000 undead more horrifying than these dry remains. Don't you know? You're in my soul, Yorgas Penbrook. Your little rat stole it, and my faithful minion claimed he got it back. From within the folds of the rich cape, Akuji pulled out a box. It was a lovely thing, made up of a fragile lattice of goldwork. It rested on the bare bones of Akuji's palm, just long enough for Aspen to recognize it as a twin to the one he, himself, had just finished melting into slag. Then the fragile-seeming bones clenched, and the metal shrieked as it was crushed. Traps sprang, needles flying away from the lich, while a cloud of vaporized acid puffed out and dispersed harmlessly into the air. That accursed traveler has much to explain when he returns from crushing your miserable little settlement. How dare he lie to me? Aspen shocked himself as much as the other two when he suddenly burst out into laughter, suddenly realizing what Phantom Hat must have done. He found another box, didn't he? They were a rich woman's toy not that long ago, and finding one must not have been very difficult. They all had different puzzles, though. Didn't you notice you couldn't open it to get to your own soul? Akuji's teeth ground together angrily, and he pointed an accusatory phalange at Chester. It belonged to your idiot of a king. I thought I must have lost the trick of it when I took over his body, and I've been working at it for days. Aspen laughed again. Did you try melting it? An impossible hiss came from a non-existent palate. What kind of fool do you think I am? I threw it into the flames after I failed to open it the first time. It was a noble's plaything, and is well protected from such simple things. Only mage fire could burn it, and there are no more mage smiths since I swallowed the last one 100 years ago. She refused to teach me her magic, and so she died, and her craft with her. The skeleton sounded almost petulant. Far from the commanding, terrible power that he had been when he came to Aspen's cell outside of Bright, and leached away his strength and skills. So you've just been sitting in Bright, working at a lady's jewelry box, while Phantom Hat traveled north, looking to steal back the thing that he stupidly lost before you realized the truth? A hoarse, rasping laugh came from the husk of a man in Aspen's arms, and both Aspen and Akuji looked at Chester in some surprise, having been caught up in their own exchange. This? Chester choked out. This is the dreadlord that has enslaved and ravaged nations for nearly a millennium? His sharp chin tilted, and his head rolled back so he could look up at Aspen. He sounds like my father. A petty, merciless tyrant with more power than he should ever have been granted. Strength exhausted, his eyes closed, and his head lolled forward again. Once toward the end of the war, when all but a few of Cordernell's once mighty armies were recalled to protect Bright, Chester had called together his council. Most of the lords upon whom the country had once rested were either dead or broken, and only Duke Gerald, erstwhile father-in-law of Yorga's Pembroke, and Yorga's himself had bothered to respond to the king's call. Chester had been as broken as his country, nearly sobbing as he begged his two remaining vassals to come up with something, anything, that would save Bright. Duke Gerald had blithely assured the king that he would triumph, and patted the beaten king jovially on the back before returning to his raids on the last few treasures of Cordernell. Yorgas had suspected that the man had some intention of fleeing before Akuji's forces closed their death trap around Bright, but he had never been able to find any proof of such a plan. Yorgas, a man who was woefully unprepared to provide emotional support to anyone, had been left behind with the depressed king. Chester had proceeded to drink himself into a stupor as he muttered about how he never wanted to be ruler, and his father had forced the role upon him in order to keep the throne in his family, even though Chester was clearly uninterested and unsuited to the position. When the sodden man had finally fallen into unconsciousness, Yorgas had tucked his red velvet cloak around him where he sat, and returned to his own home to plot his disastrous attempt to keep his daughter Lark safe. Now an older and perhaps wiser, Aspen looked down at the pathetic remnants he held and felt nothing but pity. Looking up at Akuji, Aspen simply asked, "What now?" Akuji held out his hand, and the crumpled box clanked to the ground. Now I return to the wretched physical remains of that paltry excuse for a king, and throw away the false container that fool Phantom Hat gave me. Then I come myself, as I would have done in the beginning if my slave hadn't dared attempt to deceive me, and I finally destroy everything you hold dear. The skeleton king rose from his throne, cold yellow bones scratching on the floor as he stepped forward. And when I see you next, Yorga's Pembroke, what I have done to your king will seem like a blessing from your powerless little goddess. Slowly, Aspen knelt and placed his too light burden on the ground. When he straightened, he braced his feet wide and said quietly, "Yorga's Pembroke is dead, Akuji. So are you and my poor weak friend. I promise you this. If we do meet again, I will finally drag you into the chaos pool where you belong." Akuji advanced down the dark, narrow path between the frozen stone figures of those whose lives he had stolen for so many years. A deep blue light began to flicker around the bones of his hands. "Your chaos pool cannot hold me, mortal," he hissed, "and if you think you will return from my place of power unscathed." Aspen laughed and Akuji halted, shocked at the sound. "Your place of power?" Aspen asked. "This is your prison, Lich Lord, and if you prefer it to your proper death, then you are the fool." Akuji lunged, his flaming hand suddenly wielding the malignant blade he had used to kill Lark, and Yorga's had then used to slay the lich. The weapon hummed hungrily as it swirled through the air, and then Aspen felt a hard tug at the base of his spine. He was yanked backward, and the blow passed harmlessly in front of him. Another swing, another tug, and then the gloomy mausoleum began to spin and fade as Akuji roared his frustration.